Hello and welcome, and delighted to be here again for another of Kasmi's Pondering Procurement series. My name's Graham Crawshaw, the content director at Kasmi. And once again, I'm here with a very special guest and delighted to welcome Garrett Clark to the podcast. Hello, Garrett.
Well, hello, Graham, and hello to the Kasmi audience. It's very exciting to be a part of this. Hopefully we produce something great and memorable. I do like to talk, so let's see what happens.
I need to make sure I get a word in it?
Yep.
As well, I think that's the way that it goes. Well, we're having a very non-traditional discussion today, and I think I deliberately use the word non-traditional because every time we've spoken, you're not the traditional procurement guy at all, are you?
No, I'm not, and I take quite a bit of pride in that.
Right.
I mean, as you know, just like in everything in life, whether it's business, sports, and we'll probably get into sports in a little bit, but there's no one true way to experience success. And so, you know, I think in those kinds of terms, there's no one way. There's many different ways to experience success. So why not embrace a lot of different methods, you know, to those ends?
Wow. Okay. So before we get into the detail, just tell everyone listening a bit about yourself. And don't take half an hour. Just the short version.
I'll try to keep it short because I have an extensive work history, career background. You know, I've spent time being a fashion model, runways. I spent time in working at a duty-free shop, so retail, consumer electronics, financial services, biotech, software, so many things in between. I've even spent time, you know, working in a bookbinding factory. And that is one experience that, let's say, motivated me to get through school and have ambitions on some higher things. So
wow. And where does procurement fit into all of that lot?
So procurement actually started during my days at working within a duty-free shop. And this is in the Detroit area. So real quick, I'm actually born and raised and from Ann Arbor, Michigan, but have been living out in California, different cities for, almost the last 20 years. But not to digress too much. But that started when I was working at a duty-free shop in the Detroit Metro Airport. And I started, you know, having the responsibility to actually buy some of our merchandise, and those interactions with those vendors that were supplying us the merchandise. And this is some high end stuff that had me thinking, huh, this is different and I rather enjoy this. Mm. So it kind of started there. I was a college student at the time. So I was studying international business with a minor in Japanese, and part of that major was marketing. So, and whenever you're in or have a major that focuses on the international piece, wow, did that pay huge dividends for me throughout my career. But just understanding how different cultures, nations, et cetera, approach business and solutions to issues. So that's kind of a foreshadowing there. But yeah, that's how it got started. Once I graduated from school, started right away at hardcore manufacturing, procurement. This is what we called production buying, or, you know, direct buy. I was buying things like fuel and brake lines, wheels, tires, that sort of thing. It was hardcore. Wow. Eye-opening. Woof.
Sounds fun.
Oof, there were some, and this is where this kind of, and you know, Graham, we've kind of touched on this a little bit, how this love, kind of not love, relationship started with the whole industry of procurement. There are some definitely some aspects of it that I liked, but there was a lot that I didn't like. And this had to do with a lot of the personalities that were sort of collected in that environment. You know, I don't have any, you know, hardcore data statistics around the mm-hmm. personality types that are attracted to, say, like a finance role, or being a police officer or a military person, or what we do in procurement. But in that environment, there were a lot of the same type of personalities. And I'm going to be honest with you, it was all more about power, you know, accumulating power and control. especially over the supply base. And I can honestly say I wasn't always necessarily fully comfortable with that. So yeah, but here's what happened though that started changing the way I viewed procurement. And this was having a stint at, so Ford owned a stake in a particular automotive company. And I got to spend time there, Mazda. And I got close access to their engineers and some of their procurement people. And I could see how they would do business with their supply base. It was quite a bit different than our mentality.
Okay.
they were much more transparent, open, patient with their suppliers. And at the time, let's face it, you know, the quality of their vehicles was rated more superior than Ford. Mm. So here's my first controversial statement. To this day, when I see recall activity in a manufacturing sector, the thought that instantly pops into my head is, uh-oh, can you trace that back to the procurement department and some of the cost saving or cost reduction type initiatives that are going on? So again, this is back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where these types of annual cost reductions were baked into our, you know, performance reviews and things like that. And naturally that can sort of encourage unfortunate behavior, you know, kind of wanting to cut corners on quality. A lot of times it just became about meeting that cost reduction target by any means necessary.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was, I mean, that wasn't just in that industry. I think that was a mentality, wasn't it? That was what procurement did.
Yes.
And I would say, jumping today, we got to make sure that we don't almost go back to that just because we've got high inflation, high interest rates. But anyway, no, back to the 90s.
Yeah, that mentality was so pervasive back then, and you still see remnants of that today. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like, for whatever reason, a lot of, you know, the procurement teachings that, you know, a lot of my contemporaries hold on to were born seemingly in like the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Well, the world has changed significantly since then. Business practices certainly have, you know, our supply base has a lot more leverage. So do we really want to stay in a position where, you know, we're just pounding fist on the table, demanding, you know, these, you know, certain cost reduction initiatives that actually can hurt your supply base and therefore hurt the quality of what, you know, whatever company we're representing receives? I think not.
Interesting. Yeah. No, it's really fascinating because, I mean, that was procurement and we've got to move forward. I think that also links into some of the talent issues that, again, we have today, because you've got individuals that perhaps haven't moved up and moved away from what you were saying. So, yeah, totally get that love-hate relationship that you've got with procurement. Well, you've stuck at it. So something must have worked out, right?
Yeah. So a couple of things happened. So the one thing I mentioned was, you know, having access to a different way of doing things and engaging with your supply base and your business stakeholders. That was really a aha or that light bulb moment for me. And then sort of fast forward. So again, for the audience, I've actually have toggled back and forth between actual procurement roles and marketing roles. Again, that was part of my undergrad. And I always thought I was going to be this, you know, fantastic marketer. That never quite worked out. But getting into the indirect side and then having access to a whole type of different creative mindset, I loved it because it was more natural to my own personality. I use more the creative side of my brain. I am a lot more let's say qualitative in nature than quantitative. So, and this is one of these lessons in life and business and athletics. If you're a leader, you definitely want to build a team where you keep them, or not necessarily keep them, but make sure that they have ample access to their strengths, intellectual acumen, what have you. I promise you, the level of performance will be so much higher than trying to take a team member, an employee, and put them in an area where you think they need to grow, but they really don't have the right mindset for it or aptitude. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. And I've been there.
Right.
I've been in those situations. So again, having access or being a part of, you know, commercial procurement or procurement of marketing related services, that's a home run for me. And especially the business partnering aspect of that. And we could probably dig into that a little bit more too, if you like.
Okay. Yeah. Fascinating. So just talk through when you were on the marketing side, what did you think of the procurement guys then?
So the marketers are often give me their opinions, unsolicited or not,
right,
on what they felt about procurement in general. And usually, I'm telling you, 90% of the time, it was not good.
Right.
They always looked at us as a hindrance to their business, because marketers are always about speed to business, always have been. They're on the front lines. Hey, in most cases, they're actually out there generating revenue. They have to be able to meet competition, get their campaigns out, or whatever marketing activity they need to develop. It needs to get out there quickly, needs to be effective. And, you know, we can't afford to really slow that down. Again, it's about meeting the competition. And having a marketing background, I've naturally understood this. So you have to be able to balance, you know, the needs of your marketers, what procurement is in business for. I haven't, you know, lost sight of that or forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to, you know, provide some layers of risk, especially contractual risk, you know, things of that nature. You know, I think modern day procurement professionals, I think this is a really good time because so many more of us now are more focused on how we bring value beyond simple cost savings. So, I mean, you know, things about, you know, ESG or supplier diversity type initiatives mm-hmm. are huge now. And again, understanding how to be a true business partner, a type of, I don't know, consultant, if you will, to your stakeholders is much more in fashion, shall we say, and thank goodness.
So, for that reason, you were actually successful on both the marketing, the procurement, and the marketing procurement activities that you were doing?
Yes, I like to think so, by and large. Now, that doesn't mean that I haven't experienced failures. I definitely, here's another kind of, I don't know, controversial soundbite here. I do not consider myself a true procurement person.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, nice talking
what
to you,
Gary. All right. I actually consider myself a hybrid. Because of my experiences in both realms and being able to understand and translate the languages to each side. I found out pretty early on and multiple times that I'm not necessarily a good marketer.
Right.
I know that I am definitely a better procurement professional for marketing related services. So that's a key there. But because I'm more qualitative in nature than quantitative, areas that require heavy or precise technicians in procurement mm-hmm. probably isn't that good of a fit for me.
Right.
But you know, the basic blocking and tackling in procurement, you know, cost analysis, the basics, solid in that, comfortable in that. But again, I think I'm much more useful in terms of understanding the creative needs and the pressures of marketers and constructing their supply bases in that area.
So do you still think there are relatively few procurement professionals that have got that mindset, have got that ability to adapt and work? Because, I mean, yeah, we know marketing are quite a specific type. They don't want the numbers. They want the creativity. So I guess it does take a different mindset if you're going to support them from a procurement perspective.
It really does take a different mindset. Anyone that's been in marketing of or procurement of marketing services for a while will tell you just that. And it's funny, whenever I go to procurement events that are specific to the marketing experience, we all share the same experiences over and over and over. It gets to the point where you have to ask yourself, why is that? At what point? I mean, things like, you know, trying to get the seat at the table. And I've heard a lot of talk about that being an annoyance now. And it's an annoyance for me too.
And
it's
me.
Like, it's not that hard. We make it hard in procurement. Mm. Why do we do that? So we have to start looking at ourselves in the mirror. But getting back to your the original part of the question, in terms of that mindset, I think it does. So that's why, you know, for me personally, if I'm in charge of building a team that supports commercial or marketing, I usually like to poach from the marketing teams. For me, it's not so hard to teach the basics of procurement, but it's a lot harder to teach the basics and the mindset of marketers and have that overcome some of the hardcore procurement practices and teachings that a lot of procurement folks have learned from different segments of procurement. So I'm not going to say everyone, but a lot of people know the marketing category it's a lot less commoditized.
Hmm.
There, you have to be flexible. Again, in a lot of cases, it can be, you know, like trying to evaluate art, because there's so many differences. And if someone does something really well, whether it's strategy, creative, etc., you can expect to pay a premium for that. Unlike other parts of the business, you know, perhaps like a facilities or research and development, where there's so many commoditized areas, right. You know, having to buy like an office chair, you know, something like that, where it's, you know, it's kind of easier to have, you know, volume discounts around that and that sort of thing. Ideas, paying or sourcing and paying for ideas, whole different strategy. And I think that if procurement leaders really thought about it, right? Because let's think of ourselves and our upward mobility. The better we get at this, the more money and the more prestigious title we're expecting to get, it's no different. So let's not lose sight of that.
Okay. No, it's absolutely fascinating because, I mean, I hear from so many of our cast members, it is still an area of marketing where, I mean, the language is different, just everything about is different. So what advice, put you on the spot here, what advice have you got for a category manager that's maybe very experienced in procurement but has never done marketing procurement? Can they change? Is it something they could go for? And what should they do? What advice have you got for them?
Absolutely. If you're willing to be flexible and you're willing to embrace change, there's absolutely room for you, because we as in procurement of commercial or marketing related services, we're still a bit of a unicorn type group of minds and professionals. But the need for expertise there is certainly growing. Should marketing or procurement of marketing services rest within procurement or within marketing itself? I mean, there's still some debate around that. And I see both sides.
Mm-hmm.
If we in procurement want to make a real rational argument to keep it within procurement, then again, we have to put in the work to understand the different realms of marketing. Marketing is vast. It goes beyond just creative, right? There's media, there's digital, there's marketing research, there's in some cases, you know, public affairs, and what they need from their vendors will roll up into commercial. Sometimes it rolls up into a legal entity, but regardless, we have to be able to understand the nuances in those areas. It's a lot, and it's constantly shifting, especially with us in this digital age, algorithms, chat GPT, all that. You have to stay on top of that. So you cannot be beholden to too strong of a mindset and tradition.
Okay, fascinating. No, that's but equally, the rewards are there. So if you actually do get involved.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun, yeah.
It's a fun space. Mm. And again, if you have or want that balance between the qualitative and quantitative, I think commercial procurement is the space. There's so much you can do there, especially around innovation, because there are more innovative. Oh, I should walk that back a little bit because I don't have the stats, but I think just in my experience, there does seem to be more of an abundance of innovative and really flexible thinkers in the commercial marketing space because the marketers are and have to be. So again, if we want to be able to keep up with them, we have to be attuned to that.
Okay, so let's not shy away from getting our sleeves rolled up and getting involved and recognize, yeah, I remember your point. Yeah, it's got to be fun.
And it is. It's got to be fun, and I think it is.
Sounds good. One of the statements that you said when we were planning this this conversation was about applying the principles of athletic coaching to procurement. Now, I've not heard that from anyone as yet. What on earth is behind that, Gareth? Where's that fit in?
Right, so
because I'm sure if you and I were to do some athletics, you'd be streets ahead of me. So, what is all that about?
Yeah, it's okay. So real quick for the audience, I have a bit of a side hustle. I train athletes again, as you know, it's one of these passion things for me. I've always been athletic, played a lot of American style football. And once I was done playing, I did a lot of coaching. And because I've been a multi-sport athlete and I saw the need for, a lot of private coaching for athletes is becoming a huge business. So I really started to delve more into that. It's a way to give back to the community too, because you really do have the opportunity to change lives. So with that said, as a coach and a business owner in the athletic environment, there's a lot of similarities and I think they both kind of play off of each other. So as I alluded to before, if you are a coach of a team and you want to be successful, you got to make sure you have the right athletes in the right spots. And so that means understanding the strengths and the opportunities of those athletes. And if you don't put them in the right places, your team will not succeed. Not only will the performance team-wide be hindered, but so will the attitudes of your players. And so when you translate that to business, if you're running a team, I've come across so many managers that will try to force you into an area that you're not particularly suited for. And my thing is, why do that? Because again, there's so many ways to achieve success. There isn't one way. So why be beholden to one particular method? So for instance, back to athletics, training quarterbacks. I train a lot of quarterbacks. A lot of coaches want to make the quarterbacks all look the same based off of some prototype, like I'd say a Tom Brady. Well, he's achieved so much success and his throwing motion looks like this, so we need to replicate that. Well, wait a minute. The human body and mind are unique per person. So when you get into biomechanics, how someone moves, everyone has a unique movement pattern. You can't try to force everyone into that same movement pattern. And so now what I like to do, like if when I go to coaching events and seminars and I hear other quarterback coaches get up and talk and they'll start, trying to teach how you need to have a certain throwing motion here. Base needs to do this, base meaning your lower body. I will challenge that because I can easily throw up some film of very successful quarterbacks at all levels who have very different biomechanics and how they throw, read a defense, how they move their feet. Yet again, they're still very successful. How do you account for that? And these aren't aberrations. Same in the business field, right? We've all seen the, different leaders, CEOs or what have you, who have joined a company and have made it worse. And some have made it better. How can that be? I mean, the CEO that made the company worse, they have all kinds of credentials. They're supposed to be incredibly, intellectually, sound, et cetera, yet they'll still experience some failures. How can that be? Is that because of the culture they instituted, how they're developing their staff, their vision, all that? There's just different ways of doing things. So if you really want a strong team, just make sure everyone, you have talent that can cover all the different areas you need to cover within their strengths. Don't try to, force someone into something that's not good. Bad for the culture, bad for the individual employee's psyche, not good.
So you're saying the role of the procurement leader is to understand their team and then sort of position right. everyone in the right at the right point to be able to work together to then achieve the achieve
strength-based leadership. There's been some books on this. I am an avid reader, but yeah, it's this whole notion around strength-based leadership.
Okay.
And again, I mean, nowadays, especially with COVID and all that, it's becoming more normal to talk about, you know, mental health, right?
Right.
How many, for goodness sake, how many employees across this globe are miserable in the jobs that they're doing? A lot. In fact, it's actually considered more unique if you find employees that really love what they do. Why is that? And I would argue that a lot of these employees, like myself, who really love everything that they do, I found a way to stay in my strength. Now, does that mean, well, how are these employees going to grow intellectually and with their acumen? Have these discussions with your employees so you understand where and how they want to grow and then go in that direction. There's this notion out there that, you know what, start being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Well, wait a minute. There's a lot of uncomfortable people out there who are having adverse reactions to that with their mental health. So you have to be careful and unpack that a little bit more. To a certain degree, you want to be uncomfortable because there is some growth there, but you don't want your teams, your employee base to be overly uncomfortable. And what is that source of discomfort? So that's a whole nother podcast, probably.
It is.
I'll leave it at that.
part two. But actually, you've given us something to think through, because anyone listening, you could almost work and think through what your team is like to make sure that they're playing to their strengths.
That's
and
right.
They're not uncomfortable being uncomfortable. I guess that's, and it's identifying it. And I think that's
right.
That seems to be the issue. If it's just ignored or the help isn't provided, that's when things start to go wrong. One of your other phrases, Garrett, is being the untraditional procurement innovator. And so my goodness, we're covering a whole range of things. We've gone from the athletics. What is an untraditional or non-traditional, perhaps, procurement innovator? And why is that you?
Yeah, I think in this day and age, I guess I have to be a little bit more careful with, you know, identifying tradition versus untraditional. Mm-hmm. But I like to think that I'm, you know, unconventional in my approach to procurement because of how I view it, the types of vision that I, you know, dream up or imagine in my head, and, you know, building the strategies and tactics behind that. So to get a little bit more granular, in general, for procurement, I like to think, why not us, right? Well, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah, what's
that means, instead of limiting yourself to the conventional procurement levers and switches, trying to get creative, like not necessarily creative, but just thinking in terms of, okay, how are we getting this seat at the table, right? We need to establish these relationships. And at the core of procurement is cost reductions. And we don't need to get creative around that. We just need to make sure we're always, you know, in the position of leverage by any means necessary, and the gamesmanship behind that, blah, blah, blah. Me, no. I'm always thinking, right? Let's pick on the RFP process. A lot of times these processes are incredibly flawed. Why are they flawed? Sometimes we in procurement will construct an RFP process that doesn't allow for our agencies and vendors to put their best foot forward. Why does that happen? It could be some issues within the scope. That means we need to be, you know, more closely aligned with our marketers, making sure we try to poke holes in that. But a lot of times we really don't want to hear from our supply base when it comes to constructing an RFP. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why not connect directly with our supply base to find out, you know what, going through this RFP, what can we add to this process that would ensure that you would your best foot forward, be able and comfortable sharing your most creative, groundbreaking, game-changing ideas that would, you know, again, should you get the business, would reduce the likelihood of all the teams involved experiencing some type of bad relationship based off of things that we saw in the RFP pitch but didn't come to fruition for whatever reason, why can't we try to eliminate that up front? So let's be creative around that. When's the last time that the RFP process fundamentally changed? Probably a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, why is that? Well, don't break something that doesn't need to be broken. But again, I would challenge, because when you're trying to innovate, sometimes you do need to re-examine a particular process. And again, we know that a lot of times the RFP process is indeed broken, right? Trying to get marketers involved, you can create all these different scorecards and things of that nature. But because the marketers can be really busy, will they really be enthusiastic about filling out the scorecard? Who's controlling it? Where are we housing all this information, et cetera, et cetera? So again, why not actively try to change the paradigm? So create something where other procurement organizations across industries will say, whoa, hey, Garrett, we've heard that you and your team have adopted this new type of process, and it seems to be everyone's enjoying this, the marketers and the supply base. Can you tell us about it? Teach us this. That's how paradigm shifts change, right? Why can't we do that in procurement? Because a lot of times we don't. It's that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And I think when you talk about marketing, it's even more relevant, because they want, by definition, you're buying creativity. You don't to shoehorn these agencies or suppliers into something that you think you know what you want, but actually you probably don't. And you don't want to limit the supplier's capability of sharing with you what all their great ideas and what they think. So yeah, I know we definitely do make it quite difficult, or such regimented that it becomes onerous. In fact, recently talking, so much is often expected of suppliers that if you really are going to demand this pitch or demand that the suppliers respond to you in a certain way, is it right that you're doing that without paying them for it? Should they be expected to give you some of their sample ideas and their thoughts without a charge? And I think actually that's starting to, I'm seeing examples where actually it probably makes sense to have a notional figure. We're not talking lots of money, but to demonstrate you're taking it seriously, that you respect what the suppliers are going to say to you. So I think, yeah, shaking absolutely it up, doing something different.
So yeah, let me just put a plug out there. Hopefully this isn't a shameless plug, but I'm currently reading a book now that's called The Win Without Pitching Manifesto by Blair Enns. This has been earth-shattering read for me. I mean, basically it's an agency, you know, someone who's been a part of agencies for a long time, really unpacking this whole process of pitching in the RFP and why it's, you know, it can be quite damaging for the agencies on issues that I just spoke about, especially chemistry and things of that nature. These things are really expensive for the agencies. For us in procurement, we like to think we don't care. That's the cost of doing business. Well, again, that cost is going to be returned to us in one way or another. So again, why not impact this, and why not have conversations? I mean, some real innovative collaboration conversations with our supply base around that. How can we make it, again, easier, more enjoyable, and more fruitful for all of us involved? Because at the end of the day, if we're able to get the agency to provide their best stuff, won't that translate to our needs in terms of, you know, a successful partnership, more successful campaigns, quality of service, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that sort of transparency of sharing a lot of these ideas and thoughts and vision with the supply base, I think is more beneficial than not. And again, this is something that, you know, by and large, a lot of procurement professionals may be a little bit uncomfortable with in terms of that high degree sharing with the supply base. We're always about leverage and control and, you know, having the upper hand and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of gamesmanship. So,
well, we've come a long way, and now the complete opposite to the way we started this conversation the rigidity of what you were doing years ago with within the car industry, now talking about some of these really innovative ways of working with suppliers, with agencies, and actually getting them on board. Just to throw it out there, another example would be in facilities management, where we know there are relatively few large organizations that can offer an integrated FM solution. And I've recently, in the last sort of year or so, seen a number of examples whereby the suppliers will determine whether they wish to even respond to your RFP or whether it's actually more trouble than it's worth, whether they think that you're not going to make a change, the cost is too great.
Yes.
Especially not, I think the message is, it's not just marketing. I think it's across where you really need to see what is that balance of power position between procurement and with the supplier. And actually, as you said, how can you leverage to help you achieve your outcomes and your business objectives, rather than just putting pressure on the supplier and say, hey, I'm procurement, therefore you've got to do this.
It really is. Yeah, so this is like a passionate hot button item for me, because and if you want to consider me, you know, really sympathetic to the supply base, fine. But again, I'm more focused on the big picture, right? And I think an author by the name of Kate Vitasek, University of Tennessee, she talks a lot about this too, this whole notion of everyone being vested. So if right. you're not familiar with her, look her up. But that's, to me, that's the ultimate, making sure everyone is equally vested in what we're trying to accomplish. So again, enabling your supply base to produce the highest quality that they can, it's a win for everyone, right? And my recommendation to agencies out there, be really careful about fully buying into the customer is always right. Be very careful, because here's the thing. Are all marketing campaigns successful? No.
No.
Many of them fail. Why? You have to start unpacking that. And so sometimes that means the agency needs to push back on the marketers or the commercial folks, really pushing some buttons there to make sure these campaigns and other initiatives truly make sense to the communities that they need to reach. If you're afraid to have these discussions, then I know millions of dollars can be at stake, but so is your reputation. You may want to think twice about that. So there you have it.
Yeah, no, that's very valid, valid point. Yeah, the customer is probably wrong most of the time, but just thinks he or her is right. So actually, you're almost defining that new procurement role as being that person that can bridge the gap.
Yes,
and really add the value by having those conversations with the agency, demonstrating that actually, yeah, we accept we're not always right. What do we want? How can you position that? How can you offer the innovation to us?
And, absolutely.
And that's so different to
yes.
the conversation that we started, where we were defining as procurement as following those rules. And I guess, Garrett, that makes procurement the exciting function to work with.
Yes.
So we're back to you, and we can end on that love relationship with procurement, and you can put aside the hate, but it just shows how much we've come. I wonder where Absolutely. That's going to lead us in the next 20 years. Absolutely fascinating to find out.
If I can just say one other thing on that very topic, and because this is another hot button thing for me in terms of, you know what, procurement folks, you better be forward thinking, right? Again, we sort of touched on this earlier, but we are in this age of rapid acceleration around technology, right? Again, AI and ChatGPT. If you think that a lot of the areas that you work within now, within procurement, can't be replaced by technology, think again. I can promise you that even with negotiations, I can round up some people who are really good at creating algorithms, if-then statements that can lead procurement-related negotiations. And you can embed this stuff through, you know, really creative RFP tools. It's coming. It's going to happen. So how are you as a procurement professional going to differentiate yourself and protect yourself against that, you know, the way that business is going? And it's going to be here sooner than you think. So,
and I would say the answer to that is relationships.
Yes.
That's what we're going to offer. That's the value that we've got. That's why we're not going to be replaced by AI. So that is the message. So for anyone that's been motivated to really get into marketing procurement, they should sort of bear with it. It's the relationship and what you can do there that really is going to make that difference and not get you replaced by some
well said
chatbot.
Well said, Graham.
Yeah, we could talk all day. It's been fascinating. And I hope given some insights to a different perspective on procurement. So thank you very much. And we'll look forward to part two, where perhaps we'll see how this is moving on going forward. But thanks again.
Would love it. Yes, the honor and pleasure is all mine, Graham. Let's do this again. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this CASME podcast. All episodes can be found on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss a future one. If you'd like to find out more about CASME's procurement events, research and benchmarking, get in touch with us at CASME.com.